Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go on a Monday. It is great to have you in, fresh off a beautiful holiday weekend. This is The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. We're on iHeartRadio, we're on Fox Sports Radio, and we're right here on FS1. 1 hour from now, got a good one. Colin right, Colin wrong, and plenty of both. Doug Gottlieb this hour. Last hour, Gautam Chopra has fascinating. He's got a new series out where he takes the world's best athletes from Usain Bolt, Alex Morgan, Tom Brady, LeBron, and he takes them to these moments of greatness. And it's a fascinating series on what happens in those moments of greatness for great athletes. And Joy Taylor is joining me. Joy, how are you this morning?
I'm great. I'm looking forward to that. I like watching stuff like that.
So do I. The tease, the trailer of it, LeBron tweeted it out the other day. The trailer, it was a perfect movie trailer. It gave you just enough to whet your appetite, but it didn't tell you the answers to the questions.
Right.
So I cannot wait to talk to Gautam Chopra, a friend of mine, and I love having him on my podcast. Let me start with this. So every year I do this, and I'll just tell you this. I'm not a big collector of stuff. As a little kid, I used to collect stuff. Baseball cards, basketball cards, but I'm not a big collector. I'm a minimalist. I don't own a lot. I don't have an extra car. I'm just a guy, I like very little. I want people, memories. I'm just not a collector of stuff. I've met fascinating people who collect clocks. They collect art. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just our brains are wired differently. So every spring, I clean out the garage. And I take a big garbage bag. And, you know, I clean it out. I really love doing it. It's therapeutic for me. I feel great. The weather's finally good. I go to the garage. I clean it out. And I'm always struck by the fact, my wife's much more of a hoarder than I am. I'm always struck by the fact, I'm not even a big consumer. I'm not a collector. And I'm always thinking, why do I buy such crap? Why do I hold on to stuff? And I would say the national average, I don't hold on to anything. I mean, I am not a collector. And that's called spring cleaning, and most Americans do it. So it takes me maybe 2 hours. Some people it takes 2 days. It's called spring cleaning. And you feel better. You always feel better when it's done. It's the right thing to do. You got all these things. I'm not sure. Oh, I don't want to give that picture away or that book or that third rake or that stupid ornament I bought. But in the end, you don't really need it. Yet it doesn't make you happier. It doesn't make your life any better. And what we're happening in America today is we're calling it a big summer cleaning, and we're just getting rid of stuff like nicknames. They just don't feel right. And it doesn't make your life better that we call the Washington football team that or the Cleveland baseball team that. We're just having a big summer cleaning. So take out a big garbage bag and just put that name in there and put that name in there. And we've had them too long. And if you're really angry about it, see a therapist. If changing a nickname really works you up, there's probably some over-the-counter medications, but you don't really care. We care about the quarterback and the games and the outcomes and the Super Bowl and the parties with our friends and the beers and high-fiving when our team wins. We like betting on it and we love watching it. And my wife will make soup and I got friends over watching football. The nicknames don't matter. So Washington's going to change theirs. And by the way, lots of smart people struggle with change. Life's one big curveball. And those who adapt are hitting 300. In 2020, those who are not adapting get sent to the minor leagues. Adapting is hard. I did not grow up in a traditional family. We did not go to church. We did not have the classic Sunday dinner. We didn't have this hierarchy in our family. Mom was from Europe. Dad was not a big talker. I had very unique parents. I feel very lucky. But for those people who grew up in traditional families, changing some of the things we're changing in 2020 is really difficult. you know, you go to the summer camp that your brother went to and your sister went to and your sister's sister went to. I've met families like that. When I moved out east, I've met people that they've sent their kids to the same camps for 30 years and the same church for 40 years and the same pastor for 40 years, and I had none of it. So this stuff is really easy for me to move off of. I mean, I watch people, you know, that going nuts on Twitter and social media. I'm like, I don't get it. But I don't want to be arrogant and condescending to people that struggle with change. Dan Snyder's a really smart person. He's very smart. And part of what's made him successful is his willfulness and his strength and his foresight and pushing back critics. And that's why he's successful. That's why most owners of professional teams are successful. They did something people doubted, and they have a chip on their shoulder. Like most successful Americans, they've been told no, and they said yes, and they fought, and they're resilient, and they've... And sometimes those really successful people struggle with change. Listen, Barack Obama's a lot smarter than I'll ever be. Hillary Clinton's a lot smarter than I'll ever be. But I figured out gay marriage before both. It wasn't that long ago that Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, much smarter than me, much more successful than me, much more accomplished than me, were still struggling. That two men wanted to get married, or two women were in love. That was an easy one for me, because I didn't grow up with tradition. My life's not had a great deal of tradition. I've tried to implement lots of it to my kids. Thanksgiving, 4th of July, hangout, water ski. I'm trying to create traditions I never had. But for a lot of Americans who went to the same church and the same pastor in the same neighborhood, I've lived in 9 states. I've had 30 homes. It's easy for a lot of this change stuff. I'm not woke. I'm just not traditional. For a lot of people in America, this stuff is hard. But we're going to have a big garbage bag, and we're going to throw some of these nicknames in there, and they don't make our life better. And they offend people. And they offend Native Americans. And I don't care if one survey says 70% of Native Americans are okay with it. Well, 30% aren't. So let's take a deep breath. This is a great country, and when we're all moving collectively in one direction, you can't stop us. But when we're fighting and arguing over stuff in the garage, the lamp, the old baseball cards, it's not important. What's important is we're moving in a direction and we're able to handle the curveball and adapt and evolve and clean out some of the crap that we pretend we care deeply about. And it just doesn't matter. In fact, the only people it matters to are the people that are deeply offended by it. So let's not be jerks. Let's not be rigid. Let's not hold on to something that means nothing to me. But for some people, they're marginalized and limited and called names and stigmas and stereotypes. It hurts them. And it may only be 28% or 34 or 44. That's a big percent. If I said tomorrow, 48% of your revenue will disappear. Oh, it's not more than half, but it's a big chunk. 32% of the loyalty your kids have for you is disappearing tomorrow. Oh, well, I don't like that percentage. So 32% is a percent. No business in America this morning wants to lose 32% of their business. And that's the number I've read for years in studies that are offended by that Washington nickname. It's enough. Let's change it. Big garbage bag. Throw it in there. We're all good. We're all fine. I'm not here to mock people who struggle with change. I don't. I think a lot of it's just how I was raised. But if you do, this is going to be a rough year. Take a deep breath. We're changing some names. It's never why we've liked sports anyway. All right. So I see this. Now, here comes Grumpy Colin. Instead of evolving, adapting Colin, here comes Grumpy Colin. So there's this big gap between what the media thinks of Cam and what the NFL and the betting markets think of Cam. And I saw a story this morning where by a nice young man, Mike Reese, says Cam Newton joining the Patriots has similarities to Randy Moss in 07. Okay, slow down. The media has hailed this a success. He hasn't had a practice yet. And oh, by the way, I'm reading this morning that we'd have no OTAs and now the preseason's down to 2 games and it may get eliminated. So Cam Newton in New England, no preseason, no OTAs, never taken a snap. Go ahead and play against an improving division. That's Randy Moss. Randy Moss was still in his prime. Randy Moss did not have a litany of injuries. Randy Moss, his talent had been buried by the incredibly poorly run Raiders. Cam Newton's not in his prime. Cam Newton's had injuries. Cam Newton wasn't buried in Carolina. It was at least a reasonably well-run organization. Randy Moss is the greatest wide receiver talent of his lifetime. Jerry Rice had better numbers. Randy Moss, the most talented receiver in NFL history. Cam Newton wasn't the most talented quarterback in his division. That was Drew Brees. Let's slow down. But I do understand this, is that the media likes stories. Cam's always been a good story. And the media likes style. NFL executives don't care about style. They care about production. I'll give you a prime example. The last 2 years, these are Kirk Cousins' numbers. Now, Kirk Cousins has no style. He makes Pete Rose look fashionable. These are the last 2 years of Kirk Cousins. 56 touchdowns, 16 picks, 8,000 yards, 69% completion percentage, 103 passer rating. Those are big boy Pro Bowl numbers. You can't find me an article on Kirk Cousins. You can't find me anybody who fights for Kirk Cousins, who's got Kirk Cousins' back, who's leading the way for Kirk Cousins. Cam Newton's never had back-to-back years with those numbers. Not even close. Not even close. But Cam's got style. And style matters to the media much more than it matters to the NFL. A prime example is the Instagram accounts. Cam Newton's got almost 5 million people on Instagram. He's very active. He's very opinionated. He's got all these, the way he does the lettering on Instagram, it's kind of cool. Kirk Cousins has like 350,000 people that follow him on Instagram. Today, Kirk Cousins has a picture of a rainbow on it. So Kirk Cousins, it's painful. Look, there's Kirk Cousins' Instagram. It's got a rainbow. Hey, everybody, dude, this guy gave me a rainbow. He's got no style. He's just really good. On Cam Newton's Instagram this morning, the world's talking about it. Cam is all full of Cam. We got a little, there's no rainbow on Cam. Cam's got style on his Instagram this morning. Cam's got opinions and style. Let's go back to Kirk Cousins' Instagram today. It's a rainbow! Over trees! Kirk Cousins has no style. But his numbers the last 2 years are profound. Cam Newton's beat up. There's no OTAs. Preseason got cut in half. There's another quarterback that's taken all the snaps. I don't have New England's playbook, but I would imagine it's fairly complicated because everything Belichick does is complicated. There's a real chance Cam won't even start the season. May not start September. There is a massive gap between media and reality on Cam, and I think a lot of it is the media likes style. We like narratives. We like stories. We don't like rainbows.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
It's great to have you in. So golf has a history of being very elegant and refined, very sophisticated. Shh, quiet, no talking while players hit. Shh, quiet, refined. You walk into a country club and there's the guy looks over his bifocals at you to see if you look the part or you're dressed right. Got to have collared shirts. No cell phones, which is absurd in 2020 that you can't use devices. You know, if your kids are in trouble or your boss needs you. Country clubs usually have, like, you know, business people. You'd think 5 hours without the phone would be a little bit of a problem. Golf struggles to change. But there's a new guy now, and he's been around for a couple of years. He's 26 years old. He's never won a major, never really been close. Last year he was ranked 14th. He's the new talking point of golf. He's not the best golfer, not close, but he's the new talking point. Bryson DeChambeau's his name. And he's never been, last year he finished 14th. But we have no sports. and the sports we have, we watch now. NASCAR ratings are up and UFC numbers are up and Tom Brady and Peyton Manning played golf and it was through the roof and Michael Jordan's documentary set records 19 times higher than the average documentary. And this guy is now interesting in a sport which is mostly quiet and refined and polished and perfect and manicured, and he's none of that stuff. He's 26. He drinks 8 protein shakes a day, has 30 strips of bacon and 13 egg omelets, and we're just into it. And yesterday he won, and I think it's the classic interesting guy in a not very interesting time, and he is stealing the spotlight. Jordan Spieth is a much better golfer, but he's quiet, not playing particularly well now in a time where we would watch golf if it was on. Jordan Spieth has won 3 majors and has had 10 top 10 finishes, I think it is, in majors. He's a much better golfer. Historically, will go down as a much better golfer. But Jordan Spieth is golf. He's quiet and he's slender and he's refined and he doesn't talk and he doesn't brag. And it would just be the kind of guy that if he married your daughter, we'd all feel comfortable with that. And Bryson's not that. He's 26, looks like a power lifter. He's cocky. He talks about analytics. They're saying He mashes the ball 370 yards. Like, he just crushes the thing. And, you know, everybody's like, wow, I've seen this happen my entire life. I saw it with John Daly. I saw it with Jack Nicklaus. I saw it with Tiger Woods. I see it with Dustin Johnson. I see it with Brooks Koepka. In a sport that is refined and polished, when you get a big testosterone guy who's brash, never forget, Jack Nicklaus was not loved early. He was considered sort of moody and didn't like fans, and everybody loved Arnold Palmer. Arnold Palmer was the people. Arnold Palmer was the masses. Arnold Palmer would sign your autographs. Jack Nicklaus was not, and Arnold Palmer put his arms around him and said, Jack, lighten up. People want to love you. Love them back. And Jack Nicklaus aged very well. And then there was Tiger Woods, and Tiger Woods didn't want to talk to you and would get criticized because he wouldn't sign autographs. And he'd put his head down after he won. He'd go right, you know, into the clubhouse, and he wouldn't talk to people. And then somebody put their arms around Tiger and said, Tiger, you should lighten up a little bit, and everybody would like you. And Tiger's still not totally comfortable with that, but he's kind of comfortable with it, and we like Tiger more, and we see him now as kind of the guy we root for. And then there was John Daly, and we liked him too, but he smoked during golf and drank a bit too much and gambled and wasn't very good. With all these Paul Bunyan characters in golf, it always comes down to the same thing. Can they putt? This weekend, Bryson was great at putting. You don't win golf tournaments because you jack it 350 yards. John Daly would be Jack Nicklaus if that was the case. Jordan Spieth's a much better golfer than Bryson, just not currently playing that well. But this sport, which is elegant and refined and a gentleman's game, and it's manicured and it's perfect and you can't talk and it's quiet. I mean, God, the Phoenix Open would be a quiet NFL tailgate. It's the rowdy part of golf. And it just stands out because golf's not rowdy. Bryson stands out in a time there's nothing else going on. And I think he's going to be a nice golfer. And everybody said he's now doing stuff that's just analytically so unique. It's Moneyball. What, mashing at 370? Then chipping on and putting? If that's Moneyball, the A's have never won a World Series. The Yankees have 27. It still comes down in golf to putting. When Tiger and Jack, you can go to YouTube and you go look at the great moments in Tiger and Jack, and both were incredibly long hitters. We all know Tiger was long off the tee. Jack Nicklaus was a monster off the tee. He looked like a football player. Jack was Ohio State. He was ripped. He was jacking the ball further than everybody. But if you go to Jack's championships, he was great with a wedge. He was great with his irons, and he was great on the green. That's what separates him and Tom Kite. Tom Kite missed too many good putts. Jack hit him. And that's what separates Phil Mickelson often from Tiger. In Tiger's 10-year run, he hit a lot of 18-foot putts. Tiger was unbelievable on the greens. Yes, he jacked the ball 300 some yards. But this guy, Bryson DeChambeau, this weekend, he was number one in putting. That's why he won, because he doesn't win all that much. He's amazing, and he has 37 strips of bacon for breakfast. And at some point, I think I would have an aneurysm after about 6. His story is fascinating, but his golf so far, This weekend he putt, and he won. And that really, that's the difference between Daly and Dustin Johnson and Tiger, and Daly and Dustin Johnson and Brooks Koepka and Jack. How do you do on the greens? But I wouldn't deny, it's fun. Golf doesn't have a lot of fun and interesting. This guy is both. Cocky too, brash, yeah, a little testosterone. But it's interesting in a sport that often is pretty flatline.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
So we hope you had a great weekend. And this week, the MLS comes back. So it's we're starting to get a little bit of sports. And every Monday we do this throughout the... I used to only do this during the football season. But people liked it, and so we thought we'd extend it. And I'm wrong all throughout the year, not just the football season. So it's Colin right, Colin wrong. Here we go.
Where Colin was right?
Well, Zion Williamson, the pictures are out, spent the quarantine getting in unbelievable shape. The 19-year-old was responsible, and I'm right on this because I never thought the weight criticisms were warranted. Number one, kids now eat better and have better nutritionists and trainers than they've ever had. Secondly, Charles Barkley, in a different era, never got too heavy for basketball. And Zion is very much Charles Barkley. He's smart. He's a get-it guy. He gets the big picture. Secondly, you know, there's the old saying about baby fat. You know, when you're 18, 19, you just don't eat as well as you do when you get into the NBA. And also in college, you play 30 games. In the NBA, you play 82. So you just burn off all that weight. But more than anything, this is Zion showing you he is what we have predicted. Smart, gets it, will take care of his body, and will be a top 20 player in the NBA the second he joins it. And he has been all of that.
Where Colin was wrong.
I don't get the Antonio Brown fascination in the NFL. And now my two favorite guys, Tom Brady and Russell Wilson, love him. Russell Wilson's working out with him. I just don't get it. Listen, he's toxic. And college football now is furnishing the NFL with about 20 to 25 draftable wide receivers a year. The rules now being implemented. It's hard to double wide receivers. I mean, I'm not denying there's talent, but Lord, the Raiders situation was a mess. New England lasted briefly. Pittsburgh the last year. And these are good organizations by and large. I mean, let's be honest about this. Pittsburgh's well run. New England's well run. I don't get it. But not only are people giving him another chance, it's like Russell Wilson and Tom Brady love him. I don't think he's worth the risk, just my opinion.
Where Colin was right.
I also don't think we need an NFL preseason. It's down to two games, and the NFLPA, the Players Association, says, let's get rid of the preseason. This has been something I've been advocating for since I've been doing radio. There are certain things in sports we cling to, and you can't give me a reason why. The idea that pro athletes need a preseason. The LA Rams 2 years ago decided to not play any of their starters in the preseason. Not only did they go to the Super Bowl, not only were they the fourth healthiest team that year, they started the year 8-0. Meaning, it wasn't like they needed to ramp up because they were behind everybody. They started on fire. None of the good teams play their starters except for a series or two in week three. Bad optics, bad football, more injuries. Get rid of it. It's about time.
Where Colin was wrong.
LeBron James has once again embraced J.R. Smith. Didn't we see him have a breakup on national TV? There's some sort of strange attraction between LeBron and J.R. Smith. Now, I will say this. He's been in a lot of big games. He's hit some big shots. And he's a big guard. He's like, you know, people forget he's not that much smaller than... He's 6'6". He's a huge guard. But he's kind of nuts, and he's not really very detailed. And he's just not what LeBron historically likes to play with. LeBron loves cagey veterans that he can rely on situationally. And J.R. Smith is big, but good hell, he doesn't know the score of games. But there's some sort of attraction here. He's one of LeBron's guys. I just is not my answer for the Lakers. I liked Avery Bradley, but he left.
Where Colin was right.
Well, the 4th of July is, of course, the anniversary and when KD went to the Golden State Warriors. And I've said KD is the most sensitive player of my generation in the NBA. Now, being sensitive doesn't mean you're a bad person, but I think the sensitivity led to him leaving Golden State, which I think is a horrible decision. And how did he spend the anniversary 4th of July this weekend? Firing back on Twitter to his critics, anonymous people who would never show their face and their opinions are mostly useless. This is who KD is. He's a very sensitive guy. Now, again, doesn't make you a bad guy. In fact, you can make an argument that sensitive people have more empathy, they're better people. But I do think that sensitivity led him to leave a gold standard organization to Brooklyn, which has already fired their coach and is really unraveled over the last 3 to 4 months.
Where Colin was wrong.
Well, the Patriots signed Cam Newton. I was wrong on that, and I said it last week. But what it really signals is they're not going to go 6-10, and they're not rebooting this season, which I thought made so much sense. But if Cam Newton's on the team, I think they feel much more like an 8-8, 9-7 football team than a 6-10 football team. And that would, of course, drop them out of the top 10 NFL picks. And I really, as smart as this organization is, it's a perfect time. You've built up so much equity to just play young guys. You know, you don't have to go to the playoffs to build a culture. Miami Dolphins did a great job building a culture last year and were lousy in September and October. But by going after Cam Newton, it's going to make him more viable offensively. And it doesn't feel like it's a 5-11 reboot season. I do, and I have my issues with Cam, but he feels much more 9-7 than he does 6-10.
Where Colin was right?
Well, when everybody was saying Sean McVay was the next great offensive coach in football, I said, he's not even the best offensive coach in his own division. That's Kyle Shanahan. Shanahan's the best young offensive coach in the last 20 years in the NFL. And I like Sean McVay. I'm a fan of Sean McVay. He's not Kyle Shanahan. Well, Ronnie Lott, perhaps the greatest player at his position all time, former Niners, says Kyle Shanahan is Bill Walsh.
To me, they're there. And they're there on the offense. And the reason I think they're there on the offense is that I think, and I've said this, I think Kyle is our version of Bill Walsh. I think he's one of the most innovative guys in pro football when it comes to offense.
Yeah. No, Kyle Shanahan's the real deal.
Where Colin was wrong.
Even my wife is making fun of me. I'm back into golf. I was so into Tiger. He changed my viewing habits. He was like the Sopranos in golf shoes. Like I was on a TV. And then Tiger left, and so did I. And the sport just hasn't had many compelling people. But Bryson DeChambeau pulled me back in this weekend. He's a big hitter. He's Paul Bunyan. He eats 37 strips of bacon for breakfast. There's something about him that's fascinating. I don't see him as an all-time great, but I'm even taking golf lessons now. I'm back into the sport. Yeah, no, it's my wife's just joking. She's like, when I met you, you used to roll your eyes at golfers.
You're taking lessons?
Yeah, I'm back into golf. And part of it is, when you give me these compelling people in golf, it pulls me back in every time. And I never thought I'd be back into golf. I mean, I watch the U.S. Open and Masters. I'm a sportscaster. I watch the big events and I follow it. I can read, but I don't really watch it outside of the... And here this weekend, I'm watching golf. So I'm, as my wife would attest, I'm just a walking hypocrite.
Where Colin was right?
Well, the Cam Newton situation, I was wrong. He's a Patriot. I just never saw it. But the betting market is proving me right. From 9 wins to 9.5 with Cam. This is a team that Brady won 12 with last year. I like Cam, but I've always thought his greatness and his talent and his value was massively overstated by the American media. I get Carolina fans loving him. He was the face of the franchise. He's fun. He's stylish. I've always said he's Westbrook. Hard to take your eyes off. I get that part of it. But I've never thought he was a great quarterback. I've always thought he's a great athlete who can make great plays and has great moments, but the consistency is what separates Russell Wilson from average quarterbacks in the NFL or Tom Brady or Breeze. And the betting market, Cam Newton is half a win more than Jarrett Stidham. And that, even to me, feels a little low, but more realistic.
Where Colin was wrong.
I've been very critical of Joel Embiid of the Sixers, who I think is semi-committed, except on Instagram. But, gotta give him credit, gotta admit, he's been totally focused during the quarantine. Even his head coach, Brett Brown, has been a little shocked.
There is nobody on our team that has put in more time than Joel Embiid. And forget, you know, what he's actually done in the gym just for a minute. Just go to man hours and consecutive days and the amount of days that he has put in over the past few months. I'm proud of him. I respect him. He needed to do it. You know, we understand the impact that he can have on our team.
Surprise me. It's very hard to change a goofball into intense guy. It's easy for an intense guy to occasionally have a margarita, chill out on the beach. But for him, this was a great opportunity to be unfocused. COVID's hard to be focused. There's a lot of stuff and anxiety and stuff happening. But Embiid has given every ounce of his time to the right stuff. Good for him.
Where Colin was right.
Finally, when Donald Trump won the election, I said, be very careful, conservatives. Be very careful laughing at your rivals. This now means celebrities with no history in government, driven by narcissism and things that shouldn't be running our country, can become the leading candidates. Kanye West this weekend says, I'm running for president. Now, he's not going to win. But the point being is, when Donald Trump was elected, all the conservatives said, yeah. And I said on the air, Kanye West will now become a presidential candidate. Because people who are driven by popularity, that's Trump's game. It's always been Trump's game. It's about the brand. Kanye's brilliant, but it's about the brand. This is now the future of American politics. About the brand, not the country. I'm not a big fan of our current White House. Nothing against Kanye. Love his music and shoes. But is this the future of America? Celebrities. Building brands. Not caring about, you know, like the people and stuff. That's what people in government should be about. Us, not me. You know. By the way, I actually said on the air, laugh all you want, but this has opened the door for Kanye West and other people who are brand builders. And that's what Trump is. Trump's a brand builder. I mean, all his decisions are based on the brand, his base.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Well, Gotham Chopra is somebody I bring on my Saturday podcast two or three times a year. He's an award-winning, Emmy Award-winning documentary creator, documentarian. I don't know why I always struggle to say that. He's done a variety of things. He did Tom Versus Time, which I think gripped us, certainly on this show. He's got a new series. Friday, 7 episodes come out, Apple TV. And that's one of the TV channels that didn't exist 10 years ago, does today. And it's going to be high-end. It's fascinating. He takes many of the greatest athletes of all time. And he gets Kelly Slater, the swimmer. Katie Ledecky, the surfer, excuse me. Kelly Slater, the surfer. He gets Katie Ledecky, the 15-time world champion swimmer. He does get LeBron James. He gets Usain Bolt. He gets Shaun White. He gets these athletes. And he wants to find a pivotal moment in their career. And it's not the Super Bowl. It's not the Olympics. These moments in their career that they have, from what I'm guessing, just ultimate clarity. And so I want to bring him in via the Coward Global Satellite Network. Gotham Chopra, author, filmmaker, award-winning. Okay, so let's start with this. A surfer. So Kelly Slater, and I know who Kelly Slater is. He's a surfer. But he's dealing with nature and waves. And then you have Tom Brady who's in this. And he's dealing with defenses and football and everything's scripted. Are there similarities in these stories? Or is it like when you talk to Kelly Slater and Tom Brady, their moments of clarity are completely different?
It's a good question. Thanks for having me. I think the circumstances are sometimes different, but the experience of peak performance, of flow state, of all these expressions we hear, being in the zone, they're the same. Like when you start to hear them talk about like what's happening physically, mentally, emotionally, it's very, very similar.
It's interesting to me. Now, Kelly Slater, for instance, is a world-class surfer. There's a death element in that. Big waves slam to the ground, injuries, surfers die. When you talk to these great athletes, Usain Bolt probably doesn't have that sensibility. But when you talk to the great athletes, is fear a motivator ever? We think they're strong and they're courageous and they're, but is it fear? Are they great because of childhood situations? Do you find common threads on that?
Yeah, I think that the catalyst is often very similar in terms of like what gets them, like propels them, and fear is a big one. So it's just like, you know, you're talking about the greatest, and a lot of the stories that these athletes tell are the ones that you know, they come expectation. Like LeBron talks about, like, just everything going on around him. So I think what's leading up to the series often, I mean, to the experience is often very similar. But I think the experience, like, is the absence of everything, the absence of expectations, the absence of fear, the absence of even sort of ambition. It's really sort of being grounded in the present moment. And that's consistently what you hear when these athletes enter into that zone. And it's fascinating. I sort of was always just sort of intrigued by this idea of what's the anatomy of greatness? Like, what are the elements that come together to create these moments? And to have these athletes tell you those stories, it's super fun. And I like what you said in the intro. You know, what's really fascinating is that most often it's not the ones that you would predict. It's not the Super Bowl comeback for Tom Brady. It's not necessarily, like, you know, the first championship for LeBron James after all the doubters, etc. It's something that's unique and very personal and intimate to them.
Okay, I'm a guy. My wife always jokes. She always says, Colin, you have balance in your life. You have a chip on both shoulders. And so often the story of great athletes is a chip on their shoulder, is that you were told you weren't as strong or as willful. But now let's talk women, because I have no idea what drives Alex Morgan or Katie Ledecky. You know, I doubt it's the machismo and the chip on the shoulder. Or is it? Do the great female athletes often come from the same space psychologically as the great male athletes for their moments of clarity?
Yeah, I think they do. I mean, look, the two women we have as part of the series, they both identified moments that were very, very early in their careers. I mean, Katie Ledecky was 15 years old. So there weren't the expectations. Alex Morgan, you know, I think it was her first start that she identified. And so I do think, like, elite athletes always find an edge. But I think in these instances, the women that, you know, that are part of the series, they sort of identified something that came without expectations, that they were free of all of these, you know, burdens that come later in life. And so I think it's a really interesting point. I hadn't really thought of that until just now, because all of the male athletes, they sort of, they talk a lot about the expectations and the pressure that comes with greatness. But these women talked about something very early on where they were sort of liberated of all of that.
It's interesting. LeBron and Tom Brady are fascinating. So Tom comes from kind of your, you know, white picket fence, you know, background, family, close knit, you know. And then LeBron's childhood is much different, where there wasn't the domineering father figure. There was a little bit more chaos. He needed a coach to step in for him to get some clarity and some vision in his life. And some you know, here's the surrogate coach that comes into LeBron's life and probably changes it. So I would think, boy, LeBron and Brady are very dissimilar. Are there similarities? One grows up in the classic kind of white American neighborhood, the other one in more urban. Do you find any similarities with Brady and LeBron?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, just like devotion to greatness. Like, these guys are relentless in terms of their pursuit of being the best. Something you pointed out again earlier, like the edge, like they always find a way to grab onto their own narrative and twist it. Like, even the things you were just mentioning, like, nobody, you know, Tom has had it easy. He's had a comfortable life. He has a stable family. So all of these things, he finds a way to sort of turn that into his source. Like, oh, I've got doubters now. Of course, now for the last 5 years, it's all been about his age in terms of, like, he's tired. You know, LeBron in Greatness Code, he identifies like that game for him is early. And you're saying, you know, you're talking to a Celtics fan here. So I remember this game. In fact, when he told it to me, I kind of wanted to cry because it's in 2012. Prior to all of his championships, when people doubted, like, oh, LeBron, here he goes, you know, he's going to choke again. And for him, that sort of became the narrative. So I think in terms, like, that gave him that edge. So I think that's always something that elite athletes find, is that edge. In Tom Brady's mind, he's still the sixth round pick that was, you know, passed over by every single team, including the Patriots, six times. You know, he uses that to drive himself.
And then you have Shaun White. Generationally, you know, he's not me. And he has a sport in itself that didn't get respect forever. So you have Shaun White, non-team, about the individual, becomes a rock star individually. There could be a generational difference with some of your athletes. Yeah. Shaun White, what motivates Shaun White?
Well, Sean's might be, I mean, I got to be careful here, but Sean's might be my favorite episode. Sean came so prepared to tell this story, and it was for an Olympic qualifier, so it wasn't necessarily game. Like, even when we were putting this together, we had to search far and wide to find the footage, you know, for this stuff, because it wasn't necessarily like the highest profile event. But I think for Sean, again, it was that expectation. It was that Sean talks about, he's like, you know, I was at a place where I would just show up and everyone would think it's over. Sean's here, you know, he's going to win. He's like, but, you know, I have to actually go out and perform. So all of that weight of expectations. And then he talks about a qualifier and, you know, you kind of have to understand the way these, you know, snowboarding works. But like, he failed on the first two runs. So like all the weight in the world was on that third run for him. And if he didn't, you know, perform, then Sean White becomes the greatest failure of all time. So, you know, it's just, again, it's like how these athletes find those things to sort of motivate and sort of put pressure on themselves in some ways and then come through. And that's where the greatness is.
Now Usain Bolt, who's the biggest sports star in his country. So now it's an international story. So, I mean, Usain Bolt's basically carrying the pride of a nation on his shoulders. When I look down at all these athletes, my first takeaway is the pressure is on Usain Bolt. Tom Brady doesn't win, Boston's pissed. The rest of the country's okay with it. Was Usain Bolt an interesting story to you?
I mean, well, when I got to go, you know, it's pre-pandemic. So I was like, I was down in Jamaica. And, you know, Usain just like sort of embodies everything about that country. And, you know, running, sprinting is all of our sports in this country combined. You know, it's the NBA, it's the NFL, it's MLB, it's everything sort of all in this one tiny little country. And Usain just sort of, he has this vibe, he has this swagger. You go to his house, he's got like Jamaican music playing on it, and he's just like, he carries that. I mean, just the images you're showing right now, like, you know, he just has so much sort of energy and fun doing what he does. And again, like, you know, he carries that with him. And it was super cool to be down there and just, you know, hear him telling these stories. And, you know, it's fun because like the more these guys, you know, start to talk about their stories, the deeper they get in. And you can almost always see like their eyes drift into, because they're recalling not just like the moments, but the experience, the feeling of greatness. And so that's what, you know, the series, by the way, isn't just us like doing interviews and then slapping, you know, archival footage on the stuff. It's like we really kind of created a visual experience. So it's animation, it's visual effects. I had some great partners just really help capture, because so much of it's like the psychological and emotional experience of greatness. The timings, you know, Tom Brady talks about throwing into triple coverage. Like, that's physical. You can see it, but it's really emotionally what's going on in their heads, what's going on inside of them, that I think is the funnest part of the series.
It's on Apple TV. Friday, they drop 7 episodes. It's called The Greatness Code. Men, women, international. People we know, people you may not be as familiar with. It's fascinating to me, and Gotham Chopra is our guest. When Tom Brady specifically, so you do a documentary on Brady, and there were little moments during the documentary, he dropped little subtle hints on the documentary. Yeah. And, you know, when his wife, he allowed, you know, you guys put the thing in with the wife, is like, you know, he just like to go to work and be respected. And it's like, okay, here we go. Were you ultimately surprised? Because I was surprised, Gotham. He's a creature of habit and he's a family guy. And so here's what I reasoned. He's not going to like new stuff. And he also believes in family, and the Patriots are his family. Instead, Tom, it's like a midlife football crisis. It's like, I'm going to Ybor City. I'm going to Florida. Were you shocked? I was
shocked. I mean, well, because also I'm a Patriots fan. I mean, you can see the jersey up, you know, like behind me. Like, I grew up around, you know, before Tom. I was there during the Drew Bledsoe and the Hugh Millen and the Steve Grogan and Scott Zolak here. So, like, Tom had sort of become, you know, he resurrected that entire franchise with Bill and Mr. Kraft and all of that. So I was really surprised. But, you know, like, the more I talked to him, and I'm pretty close to Tom, and I think, you know, he now in hindsight, I'm like, oh yeah, all the clues were there. And I mean, I kind of lived it. And I just think it was time for him to move on. But when it happened, and I was talking to him a lot through, you know, that whole free agency period, you know, as brief as it was, you know, he like, now if I look back at it, all the clues were there. I mean, there weren't even clues. Like, he was leaving, But, you know, it's still surprising. I mean, just, you know, it's just, and it's still hard to fathom. I mean, I think until I see him, you know, throwing to Mike Evans and Chris Godwin and, you know, down in Tampa, like, I'm still not going to believe it.
So I can't wait to watch it. Friday at 7, Gotham Chopper, they're dropping Apple TV. It's called The Greatness Code, a landmark short-form unscripted series. Brady, Alex Morgan, Usain Bolt, Katie Ledecky, Kelly Slater, LeBron James, Sean White, he said was one of his favorites. You know I love having you. I want to thank you so much. And, you know, I see that Brady jersey, and you're just going to have to get used to it. Tampa Bay is going to be in the Super Bowl, and New England's not. Gotham, and you're just going to have to come to terms with it.
I'm not hanging up. He's going to have to earn, you know, Tampa Bay has to earn its way up onto that wall.
All right, good seeing you, my friend.